Today on Wings, from the United States, a movement and a bill in Congress to reform welfare reform.
Welfare reform was passed as a bipartisan bill in 1996 under President Bill Clinton. It was supposed to get welfare recipients working. Now, many question its real impact and the lack of political debate.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Whoever thinks U.S. feminism is a white middle-class invention has another think coming. Poor women organized nationally across racial lines starting in 1966 for dignity, justice, democratic participation, and adequate income from public assistance, a program known as welfare. But conservatives also organized around welfare, and their vision prevailed. President Nixon called it workfare. The state of Wisconsin called it work not welfare, setting time limits on support and work requirements. In 1996, President Clinton signed a national law based on Wisconsin's demanding recipients do low-waged or socially useful unwaged work outside the home to get their benefits. Caring for one's own children does not count as work. Similar welfare reforms have now passed in Australia, Canada, the UK, and the Netherlands. More than 50 years since the welfare rights movement kicked off in the U.S., there are still women on the front lines trying to change the way governments treat the poor. Mindy Rand put this program together and is hosting the show.
I work with poor families, mother, fathers, and children that live under the bridge. I work with a prison system that turned people out on the street with nowhere to go. Give them a tent to live in. You hook up your tent, they take it away, throw it out. So it is terrible now.
The Reverend Annie Chambers on her experience of welfare reform in the USA.
The Village Voice, a newspaper in New York, called it Frankenstein's experiment with welfare.
Former Wisconsin State Senator and current U.S. Representative from Wisconsin, Gwen Moore.
What brought me to Congress is my passion for supporting poor children and women and really fighting against the narrative that poor people somehow have character flaws.
Gwen Moore knows this reality firsthand.
As an 18-year-old mother, I went through the system and was humiliated and mistreated, and the system made tremendous efforts to prevent me from getting an education, preventing me from retaining custody of my child. And the fact is that I was able to escape with a lot of community support. But I see that there is a deliberate effort to destroy these families. And I'm determined to mend that safety net that was destroyed, not only at the federal level on a bipartisan basis, but it started right in Wisconsin. And so I feel really compelled to work on this issue.
Wisconsin passed the reform bill before it went national.
You know, for the first time since the Social Security Act was established, we turned little children over to the tender mercies of our capitalist society and said, you know, if your parents don't have a job, then we won't support you. And the ability of both Democrats and Republicans to come together in 1996 and decide to end welfare as we know it only set the table for what is happening now. It served to sever a main artery for being able to organize as a Democrat. It's very, very difficult in Congress to talk about poverty without some criticism. When you're out organizing, people who are poor, they're poor, but they're not stupid. So they know that there is a marginal concern about their well-being. Our consultants have told us that we shouldn't use the word poor. And the data are very, very clear. Nobody wants to see themselves as poor. In the last recession, we had 56 million people who were poor based on poverty indicators such as the federal poverty level, but yet none of those people want to see themselves as poor.
Representative Gwen Moore. Moore was interviewed at the recent People Summit by Paul Jay of the Real News Network. While Moore may be a lone voice in Washington, she is far from alone. Many activists have been working to alleviate poverty and organize around the issue for many years. Sarah Jaffe has been interviewing many women at the forefront of this movement for her series Interviews for the Resistance in the Baffler. Here is the Reverend Annie Chambers, interviewed by Jaffe.
I would say in the last 15 years or more, nobody really addresses the plight of the poor. They change around fancy words for poor people, and they say low income, and you go looking for housing. When they say low income, it's not for us. We can't afford. We have more poor people in the world now, really, but right here in America than ever. I work with whole families, mother, fathers, and children that live under the bridge. I work with a prison system that turned people out on the street with nowhere to go and give them a tent to live in. You hook up your tent, they take it away, throw it out. So it is terrible now. So we have to come forth as the poor and say we will not take it anymore.
So this election, there was actually some attention to what welfare reform in particular did for particularly, again, poor women and children because of Hillary Clinton. But it kind of slipped off.
No, honey,
quickly,
no. The welfare reform did nothing for poor women and children. Yes, but it did a lot of things to poor people, okay? It did a lot of things to poor people. That's why we have more families out on the street. It's because of welfare reform. And I will just come out and say it. We didn't forget that. So we didn't vote for Hillary. We did support Bernie, but we did not vote for Hillary. And we weren't going to vote for Hillary, but I was saying to people, a no vote is definitely a vote for Donald Trump. But people just couldn't see themselves voting for Hillary because we had suffered. Welfare reform has really made it harder for us.
In 2017, Reverend Annie Chambers became the first Green Party member to win an election in Baltimore. She now sits on the Housing Advisory Board. She got her early political experience with the National Welfare Rights Organization. At its peak, the group had about 25,000 members and many more active supporters who came out for demonstrations.
I've been locked up in every state in the United States because we got out there and fought. I'm one of the 8 women that started the National Welfare Rights, along with George Wally, who was then our director and president who led us, help us get it together, because we were all just a group of women trying to survive. And he, you know, called. It has gotten lost. A lot of things have changed. And I say to younger women, because I'm 76 years old now, and all of the women that started Welfare Rights is gone or in my age bracket, okay? And we had some men, but now the system have changed so bad for people. We have got to get back to that. So that's what we are talking about now, even training the younger people, both men and women now, because a lot of men are raising their children. Train them to come back to the drawing board. Maybe not everything, but they really need to know how to organize, how to go into the districts, how to work with district managers and social workers, even to go to the governor, the White House. So we're saying to people now, health care should be a right. Nobody's child should have to die, or even a person. I don't care how old you is, because now I live in a state where you can be kind of old, you don't get no good health care. Not just good health care, you don't get health care. The doctor give you aspirin and something until you go home and you die. These are the things that we're fighting for, health care and a home. If you don't have anywhere to live that's a stable place, you can get education, you can look for a job, you can raise your children. And the fact that they are snatching the children because the parents lose their job or lose their housing, instead of trying to assist, they put them in the system to make money off of them. And that's what's happening all over this country. So we have to fight these other things that we are fighting against.
The Reverend Annie Chambers. Pat Gowans belongs to Welfare Warriors in Wisconsin.
Welfare Warriors is a 31-year-old group of moms in poverty and other supporters. And we started up to be journalists. We have a magazine called The Mother Warrior's Voice. It goes around the world. It's 31 years old. And it's 56 pages of only news of resistance. And we primarily focus on resistance in any country of the world, especially resistance in any of the wars on the poor. Our goal is, of course, to end the wars on the poor, especially on poor mothers and children. The poor have been really under attack viciously since the 90s. So the war on the poor has been very intense, you know, with the Democrats, with the Republicans. Every politician, you know, uses the poor as a scapegoat, and there's more attacks every year. Last year we had a huge reduction in food stamps. Single people could no longer get food stamps except 3 months out of every 3 years. So poor single people only get to eat 3 months out of every 3 years. And then you have to work off the food stamps otherwise. You have to do 20 hours of work a week of any work, whatever classes, job search, whatever. And even if you're only getting $30 in food stamps, you still have to do 20 hours of this mandatory activities. Now on welfare, ever since 96 when the Clintons did the welfare reform bill, under the welfare law since 1996, the moms have to work for no pay for 30 hours a week. And the average check is $390. And so the mothers, for instance, in Milwaukee, our Head Start program was using 96 women at 20 hours a week for no pay. No pay. No pay, no Social Security credits, no unemployment credit, no protection from sexual harassment, because there's no money. And you have to do that to get a $390 check. You know, in some states it's $450, $500, but you have to do that, and if you don't, you get sanctions.
Pat Gowan's organization, Welfare Warriors, supports Congresswoman Gwen Moore's Rise Out of Poverty bill. They believe it would be a huge improvement over the current national system, known as TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families.
The welfare bill, the TANF bill, allowed time limits to be as low as 18 months, 2 years. In Wisconsin, it's 2 years. After that, you can't get any benefits. So if you have no job, you're in the street with no money, no benefits. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons that we're supporting Congresswoman Gwen Moore's Rise bill, because she would be removing these lifetime time limits. You know, if women have tried to get work and haven't gotten it, the family shouldn't be thrown into the street.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the women prior to this, prior to 96, women were going to college, two-year colleges and four-year colleges, at least a quarter of the women. Well, that's not allowed. You have to do this on wage work. So imagine if 96 women are working 20 hours a week at their Head Start headquarters, why would they ever hire anyone? Ever. Ever. There's absolutely no incentive to hire anyone. And then it cheapens the workforce, because if you have literally a million surplus moms who will take any job for any pay and no benefits to avoid no pay, or you go take a 20-hour job at McDonald's or Walmart. Fortunately, now the war on the poor workers is continuing, but our movement is very powerful in the United States. The Fight for $15 movement has won income, additional income for over 12 million Americans. Because all these wars on the poor are mixed together, you know, whether it's that you're a sub-poverty wage worker,
right,
and all the largest growing jobs in the United States are all sub-poverty wage jobs and no benefits. People believe that the TANF bill, when it was passed in 96, that it actually forced women to get a job, and it forced women to work to get their check. They always imply that you're getting a paid job, like you go to McDonald's and you still get a check. It doesn't work that way. If you get a job at McDonald's, they terminate your money.
Right.
And if you can't, they make you work 30 hours for no pay, usually 20 hours in the unwaged workforce and 10 hours in job search. think of how backward that is. If you're looking for a job, do you want to look only 10 hours a week or perhaps 30 hours a week? It's a very, very devastating system. It needs to be ended. It's gone on for way too long.
So the Rise Out of Poverty Act would say that instead of only allowing mothers to do this unwaged slave work, that women could do their mandatory hours on job search, number one, and they could also do it going to college. They could get a 2-year degree, a 4-year degree, and that would count as employment.
Taking care of one's own children is not counted as work.
In the states right now, they can require the mother to leave their babies at 2 months, 3 months, whatever, 1 year. In Wisconsin, it's 2 months. And at that point, the children, you know, have no one-on-one care anymore from their mom. And the mom has to, again, go into that unwaged workforce or, if they can find a job, paid workforce. So the Rise Out of Poverty Act would say the states couldn't do that. They'd have to at least let the mothers be home, whether it's going to be 1 year or whether it's going to be more is up for grabs. But those are the two main things. And then there's a third thing. The states wouldn't be able to only say they cut the roles.
The
law would have to be changed to say the states have to reduce poverty and increase employment, not just say, well, we cut a million women off this year, and they're all in the streets with zero income, or they're working for, you know, 96 people are working for no pay at their head start. So that's a really important part. The states would have to prove that they're reducing poverty. Another thing that's been really important is the TANF has been a block grant, meaning the states can use that money however they want. And surprise, surprise, they're using a lot of the money, instead of using it to help women get jobs, they're using it for the Child Protective Service system to take more children away. So they say, well, you're homeless because we cut you off. We're taking your children away and claiming unlawfully, unjustly, claiming it's abuse and neglect when it's not abuse and neglect by state law. Because once they take your kid, you're at the mercy of the system. You do what they tell you or you lose your child. Congresswoman Gwen Moore put a provision in there that they can't use the TANF money simply to take children away because of poverty. And that poverty in no state is actually a legal reason to take children away anyhow, so they shouldn't be taking the children away for poverty. So it addresses these things, how the money is supposed to be qualified to be spent, as opposed to just using it on your roads or using it on taking the children away from their moms.
Pat Gowans of Welfare Warriors. Rachel West of the U.S. Prostitutes Collective tells of a bleak present for many women and children, and why the collective supports the Rise Up Out of Poverty bill.
We're supporting this initiative because when welfare reform was brought in, millions of women were literally thrown out of anything, thrown out into the street, no income, nothing. And how are women supposed to support their kids when that happened? Well, it's even documented now that women went into prostitution. A lot of women just, you know, they had to feed their kids, into shoplifting, selling drugs, whatever the women could do to survive, and into so-called crimes of poverty. And then what happened was a lot of women ended up going to prison. You know, we know it's the fastest growing prison population now is women, and mostly women of color. Then when you came out of prison and you had a felony, drug felony, then, you know, because of welfare reform, you were banned from getting any welfare. I mean, so when you most needed it, you know, coming out of prison, trying to get your life together, get your kids, and you can't get access to housing or welfare thanks to Clinton's welfare reform. And then it was just punitive sanctions against women. You know, you didn't have childcare, you got sanctioned. It was a very, very punitive system, and this is going to address, you know, the worst parts of that very bad welfare system that we have now, where you can't survive. And I was talking to a couple of welfare mothers recently. I mean, it's such a brutal system they have now. It's just really horrendous. I mean, they have to go to work, you know, to these terrible jobs that nobody wants. They put the welfare mothers there all day. They have to leave their kids in childcare, or if they don't have any childcare, leave their kids and then have their kids taken away. And then after a, you know, brutal working day in these, in the worst jobs, even if they get a job that they, you know, they want to stay in, they're not allowed to because they decide what kind of jobs you're going to be in. Then you have to go home and, you know, your kids get your kids, and then you have to do extra free work. like on the computer, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours at home after working all day for free.
To qualify for
the $500 a month. So, yeah. I mean, it's a brutal thing, welfare now, being on welfare. They make it really practically impossible.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this bill is like a breakthrough. We haven't seen anything like that in Congress for decades.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a real breakthrough to have such legislation.
Yeah. Talk about why it's important for sex workers to be leading their own organizing on this front.
Right, right. Now, that's been the whole trafficking agenda, which was really pushed forward by George Bush, meant more immigrant women are being deported because they get arrested. Just an arrest for prostitution is enough to get deported because it's listed in the immigration as one of the moral turpitude laws under moral turpitude. So just an arrest, you know, for an immigrant sex worker, you can now, I mean, more than ever, be deported for that. And so, you know, that's what we're up against, is well-funded, hugely funded anti-trafficking groups, government agencies, police, you know, get a lot of money through trafficking. Because, I mean, there are some victims of trafficking, but they don't even get help. All the money goes to the non-profits. We were winning decriminalization, and the public was on our side, and thought, you know, prostitution should be decriminalized. And they brought in this anti-trafficking agenda. Now people are, that's what people are focused on. The public thinks, you know, that trafficking is prostitution. And it's two completely different things. You know, prostitution is consenting sex for money. Trafficking is force, coercion, and fraud, and holding someone against their will. I think this bill is really, really going to be key in addressing poverty of women and children. 75% of people in the U.S. who are impoverished are women and children.
You are listening to Wings on poverty and welfare reform in the USA. Even with activist support, U.S. Representative Gwen Moore is aware of the challenges ahead for the Rise Up Out of Poverty bill. Here she discusses past problems and looks ahead with Paul Jay of the Real News Network.
President Obama controlled both houses, the Democratic Party controlled both houses for the first 2 years of his administration. How come they didn't pass it then?
Well, we were in control for one session, and the health care bill, climate change bill, there were other initiatives that were on the table. I wanted to be strategic about pushing for the bill. First of all, I was not on the Committee of Jurisdiction, the Ways and Means Committee, and I'm trying very hard to get on that committee in order to lead this effort. But secondly, I wanted to make sure that I built the political will, not necessarily among Republicans, but among Democrats to get it passed. As I pointed out to you, there are so many Democrats who supported the notion of ending welfare, that bought into the notion and narrative. And so, you know, when we start talking about expanding the Democratic Party and bringing people into our party, where else are there the treasure trove of supporters and voters other than these beleaguered women who are literally out on their own? In this last recession, there are numbers of books that have been written to describe the plight of these poor women. Evicted was one of the books that Dr. Desmond won a Pulitzer Prize for, that described the plight of poor women and poor families in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who had to pay practically market rate for housing. We had $2 a day, a book written about the millions of people who lived on $2 a day or less. And of course, during this last recession, there were millions of children, 10 million children, who lived in households where there was no income other than food stamps. The reluctance on the part of many Democrats to own the poverty issue is something that I need to organize around. The Republicans have done a very good job of driving poor people into the underground, making people feel ashamed and guilty, and feeling that they have some character flaws based on their poverty. You know, Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, who's from my state, was chairman of the Budget Committee. Every year he was the chairman of the Budget Committee, I served on that committee.
And so when he would roll out his Pathways Out of Poverty initiatives, the last time he did it in front of a drug house. You know, what is the equivalence between being poor and being a drug addict? None. There are so many data that demonstrate that poor people, surprisingly, are less likely to use drugs. They can't afford it. And yet, to send that message, or to send the message that we need to make these lazy people who are on food stamps get a job, you need to build the political will among Americans to allow people to go hungry so that you can take $1 trillion out of Medicaid, so you can take billions of dollars out of food stamps. These entitlement programs.
What do you make of what's going on now? Because I'm not hearing the Democratic Party screaming about this. They're screaming about the Russians are coming. The Russians are coming.
Well, I'm very concerned about the Russians coming as well. I'm very concerned about climate change. But these are intersectional issues. The extent to which we try to separate the plight of the poorest people in our country from all the other issues is what keeps us disconnected. Here we are at the People's Summit, and it's not really clear to me that there's a lot of discussion about poverty. There's a lot of discussion about climate change and about the fight for 15 and other very important issues. But the willingness of the American people to accept millions of people who live in poverty and just ascribe that to their laziness or character flaws.
We give the last word to Reverend Annie Chambers.
The Rise Out of Poverty Act will certainly put poor people in a better position. It would help us. Poor people would be able to, you know, get some of the services and some of the benefits. So if we at least get Rise Out of Poverty Act passed, we would be able to move up and move forward to, you know, better places. I mean, I was a woman on welfare, but it helped me. They helped me get an education along with my church, that I got a master's degree in social work. They helped me so that I could get a job and be able to support it. Well, the Rise Out of Poverty would do exactly things like that. But imagine a poor mother trying to scramble every day to survive for her children, to just have food. You know, you can't go to the school system and deal with your child's school problem because you're trying to talk about survival. Oh, you wake up in the morning, you talking about how I'm going to do rent, I'm going to do, you know, pay for my children clothes, buy them food. And so it's a survival thing.
That was the Reverend Annie Chambers. Our thanks to Sarah Jaffe and Interviews for Resistance for The Baffler and Paul Jay from the Real News Network. This show featured Representative Gwen Moore, Pat Gowans, Rachel West, and the Reverend Annie Chambers. This is Mindy Ran in Amsterdam for Wings.
Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Jinx Houston, Brad J. Johnson, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book The Gift and the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wing Series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.